The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Big news! Wayfair's biggest sale of the season is here. It's Black Friday in July. Right now, score up to 80% off everything home at Wayfair. Get our lowest prices of the summer for 5 days only. Plus, amazing doorbuster deals and 24-hour surprise flash deals with fast and free shipping site-wide. So don't wait. Head to Wayfair.com today to score up to 80% off now through July 28th.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets, like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Welcome in, everyone, to another episode of the Bastards of Boston Baseball. Hope everyone's enjoying the All-Star break. I know it's tough with no games, especially since the Red Sox have been super hot lately, but just a few more days. They'll be back this weekend playing again, so they'll be good to see. Going to do something a little different for you guys tonight. So for those of you who've been watching this show for a while, we used to do a midweek show that was either top five or bottom five based on how the team played that series. We're going to kind of copy that a little bit, but we're going to do the top five most impactful Red Sox players to this point in the 2025 season. So obviously got off to a rough start. Red Sox have picked it up lately. They went on this huge winning streak, traded away Rafi Devers. So obviously he's not going to be anywhere near this list, but yeah, things are a little bit different now. So top five most impactful Red Sox players. I'm your host, Jason Kelly. I'm here with Terry Cushman and Chris Felico. So, guys, I think we can just dive right in and start with number five. And again, you know, this is open for debate. So, you know, feel free to comment or whatever if you have any differing opinions. But number five on the list for us, we got Lucas Giolito. Obviously, weren't sure what you're going to get from Giolito. He's had a much better second half of the first half, if you want to put it that way. So, Chris, what do you think about Lucas Giolito?
Well, I mean, his resurgence has been, I mean, pretty unbelievable when you think about how he started off the season. I know he's got a 6-1 record, and I would never think he had one loss with some of the outings that he had. I think what's covering that up is there were many games where he was pulled out second, third inning, right? And we, you know, the team would come back, and then unfortunately, a reliever would get the loss at that point. But I was torn on this one. I think the Giolito, his resurgence was that much more important than Bayo's, right? Because I think both of them got off to rough starts. I think Giolito's was rougher. We also didn't necessarily know what to expect with Giolito coming off of, obviously, Tommy John surgery. But Bayo's going to be a part of the future. He's going to be here for a bit. He's signed to a long contract. He's also younger. It was also much more plausible he could turn it around at some point, even if it wasn't necessarily this year. But Giolito, I mean, at this point, is a comeback player of the year, potential nominee. I mean, he might be the front runner at this point. And I think about the performance he's given us over the last couple of weeks and in this 10-game run. There's absolutely no way we're there without Giolito. So I think five is extremely suitable for where he should be. Although I do want to say that I think Terry would have had Devers at six.
I'll never get over that. But I said last winter multiple times, I said if Lucas Giolito is solid in 2025 for the Boston Red Sox. I wasn't necessarily expecting him to be. In fact, I probably didn't really think he would be. But if he was solid, this was going to be a very good starting rotation. And it has been. And I think we can all agree, you know, we could make an acquisition and at that point be one of the best teams in Major League Baseball. But you go back to that seven earned run appearance that was against the Angels on June 4th. He's only given up two runs. Scoreless in the other one, two, three, four of them. So in four out of his last six, he's scoreless, only given up three earned. The strikeouts have been decent. He had a 10 strikeout performance against the Seattle Mariners, and he's had five or more in all other games since. So almost an automatic win every time out. And he only has one loss on the season. He had a little bit of run support early on. You know, it feels like he should have a few more losses, but completely unforeseen. I was hoping if he posted a 4.00 ERA, I thought that would be pretty good. 3.36. And just imagine if he didn't have those three terrible starts. He'd probably get Cy Young votes, and he still might, but it's going to be interesting to see what he does, especially if we're in the playoff race, especially if he's making starts in October. And I'm starting to hope this isn't his last year here, because he's going to exceed 140 innings and have the power to opt out if he wants to.
Yeah, I think it's huge, the resurgence you're seeing from Giolito. And, you know, because I wasn't sure if this was going to be James Paxton 2.0. I mean, that would have been a complete disaster if it was. And I think him pitching deep into games has been huge. It's not just the fact that he's, you know, not getting his face beaten in anymore. It's that he's pitching deep. He's going into the sixth, seventh inning now. And you have to remember how taxed our bullpen was in the, you know, first half of the first half of the season. Like, they were just getting thrown out there every single day. And guys, you know, we were saying that some of these guys' arms are going to fall off. When you get a guy like Lucas Giolito who can pitch deep into games as well as pitch effectively, it just helps everything. It helps the bullpen kind of, you know, stay a little more rested, and he's keeping runs off the board. So it's great to see. I think that it would be nice if he could get that 140 innings and kind of give us some rotation depth going forward next year as well. But for now, I'll take the 2025 version, absolutely, because he's been really clutch. And again, just a guy that we weren't sure what we were going to get out of him, if anything. And he's turned into one of your more reliable starters. So that's been really huge. So we'll move right ahead to number four on our top five. And this is a signing that I think I'm pretty confident in saying everyone on this crew on our podcast was against this signing when it happened over the winter. But number four is Aroldis Chapman, the closer who's been just absolutely dynamite for the Red Sox this year, really hasn't gotten them to any trouble at all. Turns out it's been a pretty good signing. So, Chris, how do you feel about Aroldis Chapman?
Well, I want to start by, I was not against him. I was not with the crew, though, at the time when he signed. But because I thought, you know, I didn't expect much from him, but I thought it would be fun and it would be entertaining at the least. And we've gotten the entertainment, but we've also got some wins. Now, I think with Chapman, if there was an award of the most consistent player on the team to this point, it's by far him. He's pretty much been nails since he got here. I mean, you look at the strikeouts. And I get it. That's also been his calling card his whole career. But he's got, what, 58? He's only a couple shy of Giolito, and he's like half amount of innings pitched. He still has a flamethrower of an arm. And I think when you just look at Chapman, right, and we've seen a lot of him, obviously when he pitched for the Yankees and you think about some of the collapses he had against us when he pitched for the Yankees. I mean, there was a game in 2018 where he literally walked the bases loaded and then like just walked the run in extra innings for us to win and sweep them. The fact that he has not had one of those moments in the whole first half of the season, to be honest, a little bit more if you actually go by the number of games, is astounding to this point. He has not cost us one game. He's been a net positive. Is he the greatest person in the world? Do we like him? No. But as a baseball player and from a reduction standpoint, what he's done for this team and the consistency that he's brought in the amount of the ebbs and flows of this season. Like, think about the roller coaster we've been on. Lives have been high. They've been super low. I mean, really, really low. And he's been nails consistent. I mean, it's well-deserved at this point. You can make an argument that he could even be higher than fourth on this list, to be honest.
So a beat writer stole my thunder yesterday. I had a take planned for this show. And as recently as last week, there has been speculation that he could very well likely be traded. Other executives across Major League Baseball and other front offices widely expect the Red Sox to trade Aroldis Chapman. Now, this was last week. It might have even been before we swept Tampa. So the narrative for this team got stronger and stronger when we swept a really good baseball team. So what I'm saying is nobody, I don't think, has mentioned it on this crew. Don't trade Chapman. Extend Aroldis Chapman. Extend him. I would give him 2 years just to get it done. That's what I would do. He's making $10 million a year this year. Start at 2 years, $30 million. That's 15 per. If it gets up to, you know, 20 a year, okay, fine. The dude, Boston is not an easy place to pitch. And I guess if you can pitch in Yankee Stadium, we shouldn't be surprised that he could pitch in Fenway Park. But he's only coming into this year, he only had maybe 20 saves in the 3 years leading up to this. Like, when the Yankees traded him, he largely wasn't a closer with the Royals, Rangers, and even the Pirates until Bedard just fell off a cliff. And then I think the last couple months last year, he was closing games for the Pirates. And that's the bulk of the 20-ish saves that he's gotten in since 2021. So he's had a bit of a resurgence. And I know he's got a history, but I like his vibe. I like the way he impacts the you know, his teammates around him. And what we're seeing right now is similar. It's starting to get similar to what we saw in 2013 with Koji Uehara. Chapman's got a 1.18 ERA. Let me get over to the main page. His strikeout per nine, I believe, is just off the charts. Let's see where he's at. I had his game logs up. 13.7. So it's not leading Major League Baseball, but that's elite. That's elite. For a starting pitcher, 10 would be very good. And, you know, relievers tend to tick up a little bit higher because their stuff is nastier. They have a narrower pitch repertoire, I guess. And, you know, they can kind of hone in on things a little bit better. And when you're, especially when you're potentially only facing three or four batters in appearance. But what you're seeing is special. And I just think that narrative is going to continue over the next 2.5 months.
Yeah, I think he's great to have when things are going well. I'm not sure how great he'd be if things start to go south again. And, you know, is that really a guy that you want to keep around? In terms of giving him an extension, I mean, I don't know. Like, I don't think I'd be mad at it if they did. But I always worry about a guy in his late 30s who throws the ball really hard, like the bottom's going to fall out at some point. I mean, he's not Tom Brady. He's not going to pitch till he's 45, like, you know, throwing 100 or throwing 97 to 100 at some point. You know, Father Time is undefeated. So that's the only part that I worry about. But if they did give him what you're talking about, like 2 years, 15 per, I'd be fine with that. And the other thing about that is that's a tradable contract, right? It's not, you know, teams are willing to take that on if they're really desperate for relief help. And, you know, if the Red Sox bottom out next year or bottom out in the second year of that deal and he's still going, then yeah, that's a very tradable contract. So I'd be curious to see if they want to do it. Part of me thinks that they won't. I think that they sort of feel like they got lightning in a bottle here with Chapman, and they'll probably just unfortunately let him walk, because I don't think you can trade him at the deadline now. I mean, unless this team completely goes in the tank the next 2 weeks, but that's a guy you're going to need. Like, I don't trust Whitlock to go back into that role right now. He's had too much of an up and down year. I don't trust Slayton to do it because he can't stay healthy. So, you know, that's a big thing. Like, a lot of people think closers grow on trees, and sometimes they do, but sometimes they don't. And when you're in the middle of a winning streak like this and Chapman's just automatic and, you know, slamming the door shut every single time, that's pretty valuable. So I'll be curious to see what kind of offers they get around the trade deadline. Cause, you know, if you can get a guy like Cole Reagans, like, you know, Kansas City did, that's going to be hard to say no to. But, you know, at the end of the day, you still need a closer. So very curious to see what happens with Chapman. I'll be okay if they don't trade him. I'll be a little annoyed if they do, but it will obviously depend on the return. So, and if they do decide to extend him, I think I'd be fine with that, because if it's only 2 years, you know, it's not going to do you too much damage down the road. So, but at the end of the day, Chapman's just been electric. I mean, that signing has completely worked out. So that's a notch in the favor of Craig Breslow right there.
A couple of things go ahead, Chris.
I was going to say, before we move on, I think it's important, because you said this, Terry, and I think it's an important point when we're talking about Chapman. If the Red Sox trade deadline was an election, Chapman is the bellwether, okay? I don't care what we do, what other moves we make. If this team is serious about winning this year, strictly this year, not the future, you keep Chapman. I don't care what you're getting. Because to your point, Jason, you need a closer, and he's been the best in the game. If the Red Sox are really buyers, he's going to stay put. And again, no matter what we get, if they sell him and they trade him, we're not seriously contending this year. We just aren't. I don't care how good the return is. So just keep your eyes on it on that.
I think Whitlock is very good as a setup guy. I'm fine with saying that. And he is my guy if I had it my way. And I've mentioned recently, Chris Murphy could be unexpectedly a major weapon in that bullpen, being a lefty, getting guys out on both sides of the plate. Add in Jordan Hicks. He's been good his last few times out. We might have the best. We could end up with the best bullpen in Major League Baseball by the end of the year. Just a nasty bullpen. And so I think Chapman is your ultimate security blanket. Justin in the chat mentioned a take I had, and I give this every now and then. Trevor Bauer is a psychopath on many levels, but he is with his fitness, he is with mechanics, he is with analytics and all of that. And he had a fascinating interview with Jeff Passan a handful of years ago. And Bauer always brags that he never gets injured. He never has arm or elbow injuries or shoulder injuries because he's got perfect mechanics. And the same, he pointed out Aroldis Chapman. He throws 104 miles an hour and he never gets injured because he has perfect mechanics. Now, eventually that, as Jason said, that will fade. It hasn't. I mean, he'll be 38, I think, in January. And maybe there's a reliever that throws harder. I don't know. But so I don't know. I trust him. I trust him. And you notice we haven't talked crap about Andrew Bailey in quite a while. So,
We have to possibly give Andrew Bailey some credit because, I mean, the fact that his walks are down and his, like, erraticness, even though it's not a word, but if it was, the fact that that's down, right? Now, I recognize he's also pitching in situations that aren't the one-run games, but, I mean, he was on the Yankees. They weren't in many one-run games in the regular season either, and he was still erratic, so I don't even know if I could attribute it to that. Maybe Andrew Bailey does deserve some credit at being able to hone in on his pitch selection in certain, you know, scenarios and situations and getting him to, you know, rectify that erraticness.
Yeah, I mean, you fixed Giolito. Bayo always has a very good second half. I mentioned that recently. It takes until July to figure it out, but he seemed to figure it out in early June or maybe even late May. And so he got there early. So I don't know. With the hitting, there was a report maybe 3 weeks ago where apparently they changed their approach pregame. And it's not a group meeting anymore. All of the pitching coaches, Fatsy, the assistants, and all that, they talk to the players one-on-one. And that seems to have coincided with this run that they've had. So I don't know if that has anything to do with it, but it does coincide with it. And perhaps at some point, Andrew Bailey looked at his own program and said, I need to tweak it here and there. And perhaps we've seen that. So, so getting back to Chapman, I mean, the dude's been elite. He hasn't given up an earned run since May 27th. His last one before that was May 7th. I think he's only given up, I forgot to double check this, like 4 hits in the last, I don't know, I can count it right here. He's had 5 hits given up since June 1st and never more than 1 in a game. So Charlie, if you want to hear more on Chapman, Charlie had an epic breakdown, just stat heavy, more stats than my brain could take. But if you're into that, he crushed it. So I don't know what we're seeing. Let me just reiterate this one last thing. You're seeing a Koji Uehara type season. Koji didn't have the pedigree and he came out of nowhere, but a 1.18 ERA. What if he ends the year sub 1? I know it's a lifetime from now, but what if he does?
Oh, that's fair. Yeah, then it really would be a Koji-like run for him. And at that point, I think extension would be on the table. So, again, curious to see what they'll do. Curious to see what he'll do in the second half. But, yeah, he's been huge for this team. No question about it. So, with that, we'll move to the number 3 guy on our top 5 list, and that is your catcher, Carlos Narvaez. And they can all agree that We're very glad that Narvaez is here, because especially with what's going on with Connor Wong, who just has completely gone down the toilet. So, Chris, your thoughts on Carlos Narvaez?
Well, I mean, you stole my thunder. I mean, I could have literally just said, hey, well, just the fact that I don't have to watch Connor Wong is good enough to be on this list. But, I mean, the fact that, let's be honest, none of us, when we made this trade, knew who Carlos Narvaez was. I am in New York. In Yankee country, I had no idea who he was. Although, ironically, I did have some of my Yankee friends. They're like, oh, man, we lost a good one. I've heard good things. I really enjoyed watching him in spring training. Thought he could potentially be something in the future. And I just kind of scoffed at it. But, I mean, let me just go through some of the stats. I mean, he is tied for 4th on the team with hits. He is tied for 3rd on the team in doubles. He's tied for 1st in walks. I mean, for a guy that we literally gave a Gatorade and a bag of balls to the Yankees for, I mean, it's unbelievable what he's been able to do. And that's just offensively. The way he calls a game and the effort that he puts, which seems like it's a no-brainer and should just be expected, but like the way he blocks balls, right, that should go past him, and the amount of errors that he probably has saved us, that I watch a catcher like Connor Wong not even make an attempt to try and stop, and they just let him fly right by him. And he's got a pretty decent arm. He throws a decent amount of guys out. I feel like we went through so many years, even with Christian Vasquez, who I loved, like he never threw anyone out, right? It was like anytime someone tried to steal second, you just expected, like, all right, they're taking the base. It's not like that anymore with Carlos Narvaez. And he has a little bit of that clutch gene. Like, I think about the first Yankees series this year, right, where we got, I believe, clobbered the first game. We made it look like close on paper, but it wasn't. And we got off to a rough start in that crochet start in Yankee Stadium. And it was kind of back and forth. They seemed to gain control of the game. And then I think Carlos Narvaez hit like a three-run home run. And we didn't look back, and we haven't looked back against the Yankees for the rest of the season that we've played them so far. And that's kind of been the catapult to this ascendance for the offense, of where it was like, all right, we're consistently throwing up football scores, finding ways to win when we don't. And I truly do believe that Carlos Narvaez is a big part of that, an integral part of that. And he just fits in so well with this group, whether it's the kids, whether it's a Jarren Duran. And the fact that he came out of nowhere and we expected nothing from him and he's doing it makes it that much more sweet.
He only had 6 games played prior to this year. 6 games last year with the Yankees. So, I mean, we had no expectations. When it happened, it was the same day we traded for Garrett Crochet. It was an afterthought. And he doesn't have a ton of power. To me, like when I think of him, I'm like, well, he's got decent pop. But when you look at all the catchers across the league, so many of them have more home runs. Narvaez has 8. Danny Jansen, for instance, has more home runs than Carlos Narvaez. So there's not a ton of pop there, but he does have a 118 OPS plus. He's got 18 doubles, you know, which is pretty good for a catcher. I don't know. I don't think Raleigh will necessarily be MVP. Do you think Raleigh could catch Judge real quick? Or Judge would have to have it, I would think.
I think Raleigh could catch it because he still leads in home runs, and he plays a more premium position. Apparently he's a very good defensive catcher too. So I think that alone makes him really valuable. And a lot of it will depend on what Seattle does. If Seattle misses the playoffs, that's going to hurt him, which sucks, but nothing he can do about it. Because if the Yankees go into the playoffs and Judge, you know, has 50 homers and whatever, is still hitting over 300, then that's going to be tough for Raleigh to catch him. But he does have a shot, absolutely.
Yeah, I would agree with Jason. I think it's going to be predicated on where these two teams finish, right? Because if the Yankees stay on the same trajectory where they keep kind of like spiraling down and trying to climb out of it, I don't think they're going to miss the playoffs, but let's just say they finish with second or third wild card, and then the Mariners are the other wild card. I could see him passing Judge if he stays on the same trajectory as far as home runs, and God forbid challenges the record that Judge set.
Narvaez is just, he's a above average for a catcher to elite, you know, on everything. Like what's his weakness? And quietly, I mean, he really doesn't have a ton of pressure, so perhaps that helps. But you know, not that Wong, I think Connor Wong is better than what this is. I'm not ready to write him off. I think teams might want him. He could be like the third piece in a package, and a team will look at his previous you know, sample size and probably take a chance on him. But I think Narvaez came out of nowhere. He's going to be our catcher most likely for the next 6 years. And how many really good catchers have we had? Vasquez was very good for 3 years, and I forget who pointed it out. Maybe it was one of you two. It was coincidentally in the juice ball era where he really had his run. But still, You know, he had some big moments in 2021. I would say he was a good catcher. And then you had Jason Varitek. I mean, if there's a this is insane. I shouldn't be talking like this, but 10 or 15 years from now, if there's a Mount Rushmore of Red Sox catchers for this century, there's a decent chance Narvaez could be on there.
Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me at all. I mean, he's only 26 years old, and so he's, you know, still pretty young and seems to be coming into his own. I agree with you. Like, he's above average at pretty much everything. If you had to pick a weakness, it's that, okay, he's not the fastest runner, but what catcher is? I mean, none of them are. So, and he does lead baseball in runners thrown out. He's thrown out 20 runners on the season. That leads the league. So he is very good at throwing runners out. You know, power is okay, but I don't need my catcher to be Cal Raleigh. You know, if Narvaez hits 275 with, you know, ends the year with like 13 homers, that's fine. As long as he keeps doing what he's doing behind the plate and he stays healthy and, you know, he's still good at framing pitches and all that, then that's fine. I'm good with that. I will say that I hope you're right that Connor Wong isn't as bad as he looks right now, because someone in the chat, I forget who, pointed out that Narvaez is going to need some days off in the second half because he's played a lot of baseball. I mean, Cora leaned heavily on him when the Red Sox were really, you know, in the dumps and trying to turn it around, because you just needed his bat in the lineup. And, you know, so he caught a lot of games in the first half. So I hope that, you know, Wong kind of figures it out. I hope Cora either Cora helps Wong figure it out, or the Red Sox go out and get a backup catcher to kind of give Narvaez a little bit of a rest here in the second half, because I worry about him catching too many games, but we'll see what they decide to do there.
His splits are wild, by the way, Narvaez. So he's got 4 home runs against righties and lefties, but he's got 20 RBIs versus righties, only 11 versus lefties. But his OPS against lefties, despite far fewer runs batted in, is 902, which is elite. And he's got just above a league average, 738 against righties. So, I mean, that's just, it's interesting. 50 strikeouts versus right-handed pitching, only 17 against lefties. So I guess he's definitely, you know, he's another one of those lefty killers, but I'm just glad we have him, and the offense is nice, but the defense and like Jason said, the pitch framing, the pitchers trust him, and maybe that's what makes Chapman better. For instance, he can trust the guy that he's firing 102 miles an hour into. And so that's a big thing. I remember when Garrett Cole was in the ALCS when he was an Astro. I almost forget he was even an Astro at this point. And I forget which catcher it was. He couldn't throw his off-speed stuff. So he was more fastball heavy against us, and we didn't crush him, but, you know, we did put up a few runs. So it's important to trust your catcher, and I think this pitching staff trusts Narvaez.
Yeah, I got news for you, Terry. Back to your point on the Mount Rushmore in 15 years, he's already like the third head on this thing now. I think the fourth is like you got Cody Ross and Wong at this point.
Or David Ross, yeah.
David Ross.
Yeah. Cody Ross was amazing, by the way. It's too bad that was a lost season, but... The reason I give a little bit of pause is we're 3 months into basically his rookie year, so who's to say he's not Connor Wong in 3 years, based on, because Wong crushed it last year. He had like a 360, you know, batting average into June and was amazing. And I was saying, trade Kyle Teal, we got Wong, and you know, what a moron. So
It's all right. It happens. But yeah, I agree. Narvaez has certainly made a name for himself. And again, just only being 26 years old, you know, obviously let's not, you know, crown him into the Hall of Fame just yet. But it is nice to have just a solid, dependable catcher back there because, like you said, Terry, we haven't had a ton of them. So definitely good to have Carlos Narvaez here. And it's great that you once again swindled the Yankees to get him. It's just even better. So we'll keep moving along here to number two on our top five players list. And this is your ace, Garrett Crochet. Obviously, he's just been phenomenal this season. Has really, you know, been everything that we thought he would be. So, Chris, your thoughts on Garrett Crochet?
Yeah, I mean, he's been unbelievable. I mean, he's got 10 wins. He should definitely probably have more. He's had a couple of rough starts, right? But he's got 160 strikeouts on a little less than 130 innings pitched to this point. His ERA is, I think, what, 2.2 or something close to that, 2.23 I'm looking here. But I mean, even beyond that, just when we got Crochet, right, before even we even extended him, when we traded for him, it was like, okay, this Sox team is serious, right? Maybe they're not going to be the best team this year, but they're at least aiming towards something for the future. Because before that, it was pretty bleak being a Sox fan. We didn't have any sure things, quote unquote, as far as starting pitchers long-term. You know, we had Bayo, I think, was the only one with a long-term contract, and he's been up and down in his career here in Boston. So there wasn't much to look forward to, but Crochet was like, all right, we've got our guy. Just hopefully he's not going to get hurt. Hopefully he's okay from his surgery. But I mean, he's been better than advertised. I think about moments like, I think it was the Baltimore series, right after he signed his extension, you know, we were kind of wavering and we were like, this is the time. Like, you got to win this start. You got to shove it and you got to get us on the right track, because that our season could have spiraled out of control pretty quickly early on the season. And he went out there and he dealt and he shoved it to the Orioles. We all felt great about it. We all felt better the fact that he signed the extension. I mean, he has made us a legitimate team to the point now where we have analysts out there saying we're a two away from being the World Series favorite in the American League. And that, like, as good as Bayo and as good as Giolito is, none of that is possible without Garrett Crochet.
He's the first real true ace we've had in almost a decade. Sorry about that. And I mean, you had the Price signing. I mean, he was an ace at various points for the few years we had him. Never the guy for a full season, though. Chris Sale, and then you had John Lester, and I don't know if we always thought of John Lester as an ace, but I mean, he would have been second fiddle to Beckett, as he really was for most of those years. He would have been second fiddle to probably Schilling if Schilling was the number one. He would have been second fiddle to Pedro. So I think Lester was more of a 1A overall. I mean, I'm not going to die on the hill, but you just haven't had many guys like a Garrett Crochet type guy. And there's not many opportunities to find a team so early in their rebuild that they're willing to trade a talent like that. And we did, and we seized it and we got him. And the one super minor complaint I had earlier in the season was that he just wasn't really showing a lot of personality. He just kind of went out there, you know, inning after inning, did his job. But now you're seeing him get fired up, and you're seeing the rest of the team get fired up. And, you know, standing ovations as he's pitching deeper in the games, just had a complete game, nearly had one a little while ago. A brouhaha happened in the war room that night, which was equally as epic. And I hope Charlie hears that. And anyway, so he's been elite. And the real fun thing to watch is going to be him versus Skubal. They both have the same exact ERA, 2.23. Crochet is leading all of MLB in strikeouts, as Chris mentioned, with 160. Skubal is only 7 strikeouts behind him, but Skubal does have one less start. Crochet has 20. Skubal has 19. So arguably, they're close. I would say they're about tied, really. Skubal might even be ahead of him if he had 20 starts. So it's going to be fun. I remember in 2018, or perhaps it was 17. I get them mixed up sometimes. But it was going to be, you knew from May forward, it was going to be Corey Kluber versus Chris Sale. And Chris Sale started to break down, as he typically does, except in 2024. And Kluber got him in the end. But it was an epic race. It was fun to watch. And we were pitching in the postseason anyway. And if I'm right about 2018, obviously we went all the way. And Chris Sale recorded the final out of that World Series. But it's just fun to see. And, you know, when he's just automatically shoving every time, you can turn your attention to other guys like Giolito and Bayo. And it's just that much more fun to watch them. And it takes the pressure off of them. So they're not going out there feeling like they need to lift this team up. There's a lot of guys that are taking a lot of pressure off of this team. And that's probably why we're finally 7 or 8 games above 500.
Yeah, he's been everything that you expected and more. And I'm glad they locked him up. I'm glad that, you know, as Terry said, like, that he's starting to really gel with the team, starting to show the emotion. You know, it seems like he's a really good teammate in there when he's not pitching. It was funny because, you know, we were heading towards the All-Star break and he had a couple of tough starts. Like June 30th against Cincinnati, gave up 5 runs, 8 hits, still struck out 9, but, you know, kind of a rough outing for him. And then his next start after that was against Washington, only gave up 2 runs, but gave up 9 hits and only lasted 5 innings. And I remember tuning into the radio and Tony Mazz was on and he said, you know, it was right before Crochet's final start before the break against Tampa. And he said, keep an eye on that one because this guy has never pitched this much. So are we starting to see his second half breakdown? Like, are we starting to see that Garrett Crochet is going to get tired because he's never pitched this much? Nope. Crochet went out there, complete game shutout, exactly 100 pitches, shoved the bats down the Rays' throats, just 9 strikeouts, like completely dominated. So I think he's showing you that he's healthy. He's fine going into the second half. Obviously, I still want the Red Sox to be a little bit cautious with him. You know, I don't want Cora leaving him out there for 125 pitches or anything. But I think at the end of the day, you can trust this guy. Every time he takes the ball, every 5 days, he's going to go out there and deliver, you know, a great performance. And I kind of think it does motivate the other guys on the pitching staff too. You know, Brian Bayo probably looks at that and goes, okay, yeah, he just shoved. So now I want to go out there and do the same. So I think that trickle down effect is huge too. So glad that he's here. I have no regrets about that trade whatsoever. Kyle Teal might become an all-star catcher at one point, but as we just talked about, we may have one ourselves. So that's fine. We'll see what Montgomery and Mydroth and all those other guys do, but no regrets on that trade. He's been 100% worth it.
It sounds like Montgomery might be the prize of that in the long run.
That's what a lot of people were saying at the time. Yeah, because I remember when the Red Sox drafted him and people said, wow, like, you're lucky that he fell to you. Because, you know, he had that bad ankle injury in college, so a lot of teams stayed away from him. And people were saying that, yeah, that kid's the real deal. So he might be. He might be the guy that, you know, comes up in a few years and we go, oof, okay, that one bites a little bit. But if Garrett Crochet's pitching us into the ALCS, I don't think anyone's really going to mind. So. So with that, we will go ahead and hit the number one most impactful Red Sox player to this point in the 2025 season. And that is Seydon Rafaela, your center fielder. Might be playing a few other positions going forward. We'll see, depending on what the Red Sox want to do. But yeah, Seydon Rafaela is number one on our list. Just has been on an absolute tear of late. has really led this offense for the last couple of weeks. So, Chris, give me your thoughts on Sadon.
I mean, I think of some of the moments that Sadon's been a part of, like the Little League pesky pole home run, right? I think it was against the Angels in that Giolito start, where it was only a home run and only one ballpark, and that's Fenway, and thank God. And then we get all the way to, I think it was the first game of the Tampa series, right? It's a game we probably lose. We were on a good winning streak. No one would have been mad because of the winning streak we were on. We expected them to lose, split that series. And he hits a walk-off and just keeps it going, just keeps the train moving, changes the dynamic of this team. His defense is unbelievable. I think about the play he made in that race series, where he tried to make that diving catch, rolls over the ball, and is still able to get the guy, I forgot who the runner was, trying to take third base. And if it was anyone else, they probably do. They maybe even score with someone attempting that, because I don't think anyone gracefully rolls over the ball and is able to just spring up like Spider-Man and just throw an absolute dart to third base and get the guy out. But, I mean, and then let's go through his offense, right? I was looking at his stats just now, and I'll go through all the big ones. Look at runs. He's number one on the team, 55 runs on the season. Hits, he is third. Doubles, second. Home runs, third. RBIs, fourth. Walks, would like to see more walks. It's probably his Achilles heel. This is actually the one that shocked me the most, because I think for all of us that have been watching Sadon Rafaela since he's been with the Sox, he's been notorious for strikeouts, right? And it's always the same one. Him swinging like it's a golf club, trying to juke one out of the park, and usually gets a strikeout. And wouldn't you know it, there's only one hitter on this Red Sox team that has 200 at-bats or more that has less strikeouts than Sadon Rafaela. And that's Alex Bregman, who has 100-plus less at-bats because of his injury. And for reference, like take someone like Abreu, right? Who's been phenomenal, has significantly less at bats, almost 50. And he's got five more strikeouts. Even Carlos Narvaez, we raved about him. He's got like 60 less at bats. He's got one more strikeout. So, I mean, for someone like Sadon Rafaela to be able to take what was his probably greatest Achilles heel at the plate and turn it to a positive, to the point where he's essentially really number one for anyone that significantly started and gotten the most at bats, batting ninth for the majority of the year in that lineup. And to be able to bring that number down, I mean, it's just, it's been tremendous for us to this point. And then I think stolen base, he's probably top two or three. So, I mean, almost every major category on offense, he's a top three, at worst top four. I mean, what more can you say?
I was just going through some numbers. I'm going to give a random unrelated one before I get to our number one guy. I was just looking at the last 30 days. Who do you think is second in batting average? Not on the Red Sox.
Oh, in general?
Yeah.
Okay.
Entire MLB or just the American League?
Entire MLB. I'll even give you a hint. National League.
Pete Alonso.
Harper.
Xander Bogaerts.
I should have saw that one.
Yeah, I know. I didn't either. I was instantly looking up there for Rafaela. It turns out he's like 10th, you know, 333 in the last month, which is impressive, obviously. And he's hitting like 440 in the last week. But The crazy thing that I can't wrap my head around here is the biggest problems with him were pitch recognition and not walking. And I think the pitch recognition is solved for now. I mean, pitchers can't figure him out, and it's starting to be a big sample size, and they should start to be figuring him out, and they can't. So that's solved, but he hasn't solved the walks. He's walked three times in the last month. So that's why I'm like, I'm trying to figure out what's real life here. And there were some comps, let's say, when he was in AAA or maybe even AA as early as then, because he's got stellar numbers all throughout the minors, that he could be the next Mookie Betts. And I think everyone kind of knew, okay, calm down. But I mean, what he's doing right now, I don't have his numbers for runners in scoring position, but off the charts. He's just, he's the most clutch guy on the team. Who are you afraid of more than Rafaela right now? Who scares you the most?
Story's like the only one in the last 2 weeks that you can make the argument for. But I mean, the way he's swinging the bat, he's basically doing what Kiki Hernandez did in the beginning of the 2021 World Series playoffs, right? I mean, where he was an automatic hit, especially with runners in scoring position.
Yeah. And with Rafaela, the other thing that stands out to me is the swagger. Like, he loves the moment. And a couple of walk-offs. All winter long, we kept saying we need a right-handed bat so bad. We needed two. And we got Bregman. And it's worked out fine in the games where he's been healthy. But I really think Rafaela was just an afterthought. I think most of us assumed he'll just be in the bottom third. He'll be serviceable, but he's not gonna be that impactful guy. And he's emerging. I don't know how long this run is gonna go. I really, the closest thing, does he have a long hitting streak? Do we know this? I can look at it.
I want to say he was at,
it's double digits.
Near nine games.
Okay. Well, we can figure that out shortly, but I don't remember a tear like this since Bradley's almost 10 years ago. He's just done so much damage. And even when it does come down to earth, if he gets to have bats in October, I already know he's going to be a stud. He's going to thrive in that moment. He's going to crave that moment. And he's gonna win an ALCS MVP or a World Series MVP. I mean, that's the type of thing he's done. Eight games. All right. I thought it might be up to like 12 or so, but so it's not a thing yet. I don't think it's a thing until you're closer to 20, but yeah, so I'm pleasantly surprised that contract might end up looking like one of the best we've ever done pre-ARB. It could. And before I kick it to Jason, I just want to point out, he's never been bad. Like, he's never had that Christian Campbell streak or that Jackie Bradley lost at the plate for a full month streak. He's a gamer. That's what he is. He is a gamer. He grinds out those at-bats. Even when he's not hitting well, if runners are on second and third, he's hitting extremely well in those situations. And I'm good with that. I'm good with the player he is. And if the ceiling happens to be extremely high compared to where he was coming into the season, even better.
Yeah, and credit to our guy Randy in the chat, just made a great point. He's doing this out of the nine hole. I mean, and so to be able to do that, you know, have him be that productive out of the nine hole and then immediately go to the top half of your lineup with him kind of setting the table is huge, because a lot of teams, their number nine hitter is a black hole. You know, it's just, or it could have been like their version of Christian Campbell, right? It's just someone that, you know, you're trying to get going, so you stick them nine and hope that they just, you know, at least give you a 1-for-3 kind of performance. But Sadon's doing so much more than that. And I'm glad that you said that he's never been bad. And that's true. Even when he hasn't been performing like this, he was, you know, a 240, 250 hitter with a little bit of power, but phenomenal defense. The defense is always going to be phenomenal. And now he's throwing in a little bit of the speed game. He's got 13 steals on the year. He might pass Duran for stolen bases because he's only been caught twice. Duran's been caught five times. So Rafael might end up leading the team in stolen bases at the end of the year too. It's just incredible that the run that he's been on, that contract is looking so good right now. Red Sox have got to be patting themselves on the back pretty hard for that one. I like his swagger. I think that he does kind of live for the moment. I think he's a high energy guy and he's very likable guy as well because he just goes out there and plays hard, you know, doesn't complain. Obviously he's still, you know, he's not perfect, still strikes out a little bit too much. I'd like to see him take more walks. At the very least, like, doesn't want to take walks, just don't chase the bad pitch, you know? I know the Red Sox were frustrated with him early in the season because he was always swinging at the first pitch, and I think they tried to force correct that on him. I don't know if they're still trying to do that, but he's gotten a little better. He is taking a little more time at the plate. He's taking more pitches now. And I just think he's seeing the ball super well at the moment. So, yeah, he's been an absolute revelation. I mean, you know, we were so desperate for right-handed production in that lineup, and we never thought Rafaela was going to be the guy to bring that. You know, we thought we'd have to, you know, obviously you bring in Bregman, we knew what he was going to do, but we were still saying, even with Bregman, we might need to trade for a bat at the deadline, another right-handed bat to balance the lineup. We don't need to do that now. But the way Rafaela's going, just let him keep doing it. It's been great. So, yeah, he's just completely changed how this lineup looks. He is now one of the more dangerous hitters in that lineup. And, to answer your question from earlier, Terry, like, who do you fear in this lineup outside of Rafaela? Maybe Bregman, but that's it. I mean, it's those two that you really got to be scared of. So for him to take that offensive leap in year two is a really good sign. And it's a sign of really good things to come for the future. So, yeah, Rafaela's just been amazing.
I think Anthony's getting there, though. Like and he's doing it out of the three hole, like thrust into the three hole and just mashing and destroying it. But back to Rafaela, though, real quick. Him, Abreu, and Casas all got called up at roughly the same time. They were September call-ups in, let's see, that would have been 2022. And I mean, who was the surefire guy who was probably going to be putting the team on his back? It was Casas. And I don't know if it's fair to compare Rafaela to Abreu. I mean, Rafaela can hit righties and lefties, but you know, Abreu, even against lefties, is just super balanced. I mean, he strikes out a little bit, but that's about all. I mean, hits for decent average, draws tons of walks, probably has more power than Rafaela, and he has to hit to his side of the field is far less home run hit friendly, but so we'll see. I mean, next year or maybe even the second half, maybe Abreu, if he doesn't get traded, could be all the rage. But it's just more fun. I mean, the theme of this list, I mean, I really do believe we did profile the five most impactful players, but Giolito, Narvaez, and Rafaela wouldn't have been three guys. If you told us in March you're going to be doing this show during the All-Star break, these three guys aren't making the list, and they're on here, and that's fun. That's why the Red Sox are fun right now.
You could make the argument outside of Crochet, based off of expectations, none of the other ones are on the list. I don't think that many of us, you know, you said that your hope, or that if Giolito was as good as he was, that you had high hopes, but I don't think you expected it. Chapman, most people weren't happy about the contract. Narvaez, none of us even knew who the hell he was. And Rafaela, to your point, like, he's never been a horrible player, but we never thought he'd be number one on our list of carrying us the first half of the season. We're ending it on a 10-game winning streak.
Yeah, I mean, we were what, maybe four games under 500 at the start of this heater that Rafael went on. But I think if you went back to May and you asked me, well, who would you expect would be on that list? 1,000% I'm putting Durant on it. You know,
yep.
I'm probably putting Bregman on it. And yeah,
you would have had Devers because you wouldn't have expected him to trigger. No, true. I mean, in serious.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, no, that's absolutely right. I don't think there's anyone else from the rotation outside of Crochet that I would have put in there, but I might have said Hauk. I mean, I really thought, I mean, Hauk is the Connor Wong of the rotation right now. So
honestly, if you're talking about May, we probably would have had Christian Campbell with the start that he got off to.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's,
we thought he was the right-handed bat that Rafael has turned out to be.
True. Yeah. And just imagine if you get him back. I mean, he did hit a 3-run bomb last week. I don't know if their break coincides with ours, but we'll see. I mean, first baseman at the deadline. I know this isn't, let me just end the show with this. Let's just end the show with a take outside of the list. I haven't followed up. Well, I don't want to blow the take just yet. There might be a wrinkle in it due to an injury, so we'll see here in a second. But here's my bold move. And I think I've sort of talked about it, but trade or DFA Ref Snyder. And I know you're thinking, whoa, he's our lefty killer. I know, but just, we need to free up a roster spot for a minute. That would move Romy to DH. And if Alex Cora insists on sitting Meyer against lefties, you could play Romy at second. So I think Romy still gets all of his at-bats between platooning with Massa and playing second. And what that does is it frees up first base now. So that's your offensive acquisition at the deadline. Now, perhaps maybe they'll wait on Campbell. I don't think that's smart, but especially where he hasn't really played the position in the majors. But that's where you go get Eugenio Suarez. And this is, I won't say a drastically different lineup because a lot of guys are hitting pretty well at the moment, but you just really bolstered it with a guy that, he doesn't play baseball at Fenway Park. He plays golf. And so I don't know. That's what I'm hoping for at the deadline. That's my bat. And I don't know if we'll get we're hearing Charlie Morton on one hand, and then we're hearing Joe Ryan. So I don't know. If we get a pitcher that's upper rotation, a one or two, I'll be pleasantly surprised. But that's what I'll do. I'm not even interested in the bullpen at this point. I think we got what we need.
Yeah, and we'll be getting Slayton back at some point, so I think the bullpen is solid as well. But I like the Suarez idea. You know how I feel about Eugenio Suarez. I've wanted him for years. So him at Fenway would be a lot of fun to watch. So we'll see what happens. But that is it. We are going to wrap on that. So in case anyone did miss it, our top five players for the first half of 2025 in reverse order. We had Lucas Giolito at 5, Aroldis Chapman at 4, Carlos Narvaez at number 3, Garrett Crochet at number 2, and Seydon Rafaela is our number 1 player for the first half of 2025. So hope you all enjoyed it. Again, enjoy the rest of the All-Star break. Red Sox will be back this weekend playing meaningful baseball once again. They've got a hell of a second half ahead of them, so let's see what they do, but we will be here for every step of it. So everyone have a good night. Take care. We'll talk to you later.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply. Available in app only.